You're listening to Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson dig deeply. We probe the movies that affect us in some way, positive or negative. Be warned, there are spoilers coming. So sit back, get comfortable as we dig in and probe the movies, but not in a creepy way. Okay, so welcome. This is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1985 movie Clue. Starring
Clue.
Everybody. And, you know, I love this movie. It's not technically a great movie, but it sure is fun.
It's by no stretch a great movie, but it is a fantastic movie in other ways.
Oh, it's totally, it's campy, it's shticky, it's got slapstick, it's just, well, first of all, it was partly written by John Landis. You know, American and Werewolf John Landis, Blues Brothers John Landis, Animal House.
I was not aware of that.
He may have just done a pass at the script, but he definitely gets a co-writing credit on this. So, but this it's totally an Agatha Christie locked room mystery type. It's like a stage play. It was shot like a stage play. There are almost no external scenes at all. It's all interior shots. And yeah. I was thinking, I think next week we're gonna do Murder by Death.
Yeah.
Is this a poor man's Murder by Death?
Well, I think I think it's hard to make that comparison because Murder by Death is a Simon play, which was completely a satire about murder mystery books and murder mystery movies, where this was, I think, supposed to be a campy comedy that was loosely based on the video game just because it seemed kind of funny at the time.
Oh, you mean the board game?
The board game, yes, sorry. So I don't know. It's hard to tell because, you know, looking back, because this movie was made in 85 and Murder by Death was made in like 76.
Oh yeah. And so, we'll know more next week when we dig into the Murder by Death. But when I was watching that, I mean, when I was watching it, I wasn't longing for Murder by Death. I was plenty happy to watch this because it's got everybody I love. I mean, the whole cast of this movie, with a few weird exceptions, I'm totally familiar with, totally made up a lot of the things I watched as a child, so it's great.
Yeah. Well, and Eileen Brennan, by the way, who is in both movies.
Well, so we'll find out.
Yes. The whole cast is, it's a fantastic cast. It's the movie does not lack in activity.
Oh, no.
It doesn't ever, there's never a slow moment, because anytime you think there's a slow moment, there's something hilariously stupid that happens, which makes you laugh. I still laugh when watching this movie.
Oh, yeah.
And no. I have seen this movie. I would not admit to how many times I've seen this movie, because every time it's on, I will watch it. And a couple times a year, I'll watch it, just because, you know, it's got that old-time 1950s feel to it, because it's set in the 50s. So it's in the past, and I like movies that are kind of set in that era. You know, it's kind of spooky-ish. You know, you don't quite know what's going on. The premise is easy to pick up because if you've played the game, you know the premise of what's going on. You're not quite sure how they're going to get to the destination because you're like, how are they going to make this into a movie? But in watching it, they did a pretty effective storytelling job.
Oh, they did. And there are some really clever things in this movie.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So let's just start with the plot. This movie is set, like you said, in 1954 against a backdrop of McCarthyism. And six strangers are invited. By the way, all of the plots that I read are taken right from Wikipedia. And then all of the trivia is from IMDb. And then if I search for anything else, I'll credit it elsewhere. So from Wikipedia, in 1954, against the backdrop of McCarthyism, six strangers are invited to a party at a secluded New England mansion. They are met by the house butler Wadsworth, who reminds them that they have been given pseudonyms to protect their true identity. Now, Wadsworth is Tim Curry, and he wasn't the first choice for this role.
No.
The first choice was an English actor that appeared in some sort of English show of some kind, some sort of TV show, I think. And then I think the second was Rowan Atkinson, Mr. Bean.
Oh, dear Lord.
And Tim Curry was third or fourth, but he got the role, and Tim Curry does a great job anyway.
I don't think I could have sat through this movie if it was Rowan Atkinson.
I don't know. Rowan Atkinson has shown up in some strange places lately.
I think he would have done it too much like Mr. Bean, and it would have ruined the movie for me.
Could have been. Yeah, I mean, it's very possible.
Tim Curry played the slapstick butler, but he did it in a way that he really made the role into the role. It wasn't Tim Curry as the butler. It was Tim Curry's butler.
Exactly, yeah.
And as opposed to Rowan Atkinson, which would have been Rowan Atkinson's, you know, butler, which would have been, I just can't imagine.
And Tim Curry reminds us in the very beginning, I mean, he introduces us to what kind of movie this is. He reminds us that dog poop is always funny.
Yeah.
Also, the maid reminds us, Yvette the maid, reminds us that boobs, also funny.
Yes.
So we are introduced to these cast of characters that we'll get to. During dinner, a seventh attendee, a Mr. Body, arrives. And in the trivia, the actor playing Mr. Body is the front man of a punk rock band. His name is...
Yeah, his name? Leaving.
Yes.
Leaving.
So you can say Mr. Body will be leaving.
Yes. And if you look at the film, because I was trying to think, I'm like, I haven't seen him in anything else. And he's been in tons of stuff, but I haven't seen him in anything else. But he looks terrible. He looks really... And I looked it up before watching the movie. I looked at his pictures. I'm like, oh, man, he looks terrible. But in the movie, he actually looks really attractive.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe it's good lighting, good makeup, and...
1985.
Exactly, yeah. 30 years ago, roughly.
Yeah, oh, God.
Yeah, no, it's sad, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, everybody arrives to this event, and after dinner, Wadsworth takes everybody to the study and reveals the true nature of the party, and that all of the guests are being blackmailed. Now, the first guest, Professor Plum, is a psychiatrist who lost his medical license because he had an affair with a female patient. He now works for the United Nations World Health Organization, or United Nations Organization World Health Organization. By the way,
you know who.
He works for you know who, yeah. And that's Christopher Lloyd. And Christopher Lloyd is great. He's always great.
I like him, and it was a good role for him.
Then we have Mrs. Peacock, the wife of a senator, who's accepted bribes to deliver her husband's vote. However, she claims she's innocent, and she must pay blackmail money to avoid the story being used for a political witch hunt. And this is Eileen Brennan. And she is just pure cheese. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Where's the ladies
room? She's so crazy, flamboyant, crazy. She is the dingbat nut job lady.
Oh, yeah. And does it so well.
Absolutely.
Now, Mrs. White, an alleged black widow, who was drawn in to avoid scandal regarding the mysterious death of her nuclear physicist husband. She previously married an illusionist who also disappeared under mysterious circumstances. Now, Madeline Kahn plays Mrs. White, and I'd submit that Madeline Kahn plays Mrs. White in the same way that the lady who plays Lois on Family Guy played Mrs. Swan. Mrs. White as Mrs. Swan, I totally can see it.
And Madeline Kahn is great because she has that just slight... off-kilter, unhinged demeanor of her that like, you have a feeling that at any moment she could just lash out and kill all of them.
And everybody is delivering lines so well.
Yeah, and there's a couple parts of the movie that, early part of the movie when the Martin Mull character who was the Colonel Mustard.
Yes.
He kind of had a yellowish jacket.
Yes.
And the Mrs. White character had a black jacket which had a white liner. But I was trying to see if they carried the color theme throughout the characters, and they didn't really. I was kind of hoping that they would have, though.
I think that maybe, like, Professor Plum, I think, had, like, a purple vest on.
Kind of-ish. I paid really close attention. But Mrs. Peacock didn't really have, I mean, she had the feathery, peacocky hairdo.
She had the glasses, though.
Yeah, but you know, so they tried to kind of give the nod to that. Not entirely fully successful, but...
Well, and again, this movie didn't have a lot of subtlety to it, but it did have some fun stuff kind of woven in, though.
It was more subtle than having scissors every 5 seconds.
Well, that's true. That's true. So, then we have Miss Scarlet, who is a madame who operates an illegal brothel and escort service in Washington, D.C., and she's played by Leslie Ann Warren perfectly. I was asking earlier in the week if you thought maybe Leslie Ann Warren was the poor man Susan Sarandon.
Well, yeah, and I think my answer to you is, well, maybe kind of ish, but also maybe because Susan Sarandon and Tim Curry in a movie together would draw an audience that would probably be disruptive to the other people watching the movie. i.e. Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Well, yeah, there's that, yes. That's
so, you know, putting them in a movie together, I think, would have probably complicated things a little bit, because people would have been like, oh, it's a reunion-ish kind of, you know, then you might have well just had Barry Bostwick thrown in there.
And I'm not saying that Leslie Ann Warren was not the best actress for the role, because she did fantastic.
Oh, she had some great screams.
Oh, she had, again, everybody is delivering up lines like crazy. I mean, this is a total cheese fest, but it is the best cheese possible.
Oh, yeah. No, it's like deep fried cheese. It's great.
Exactly.
You know, it's terrible for you, but you can't stop consuming it.
Yeah. No stinky cheese here. This is great.
Yeah.
And then we have, of course, Colonel Mustard, who is probably my favorite white man actor, Martin Mull, who plays the whitest man alive.
It's true.
But in such a great way. I mean, who else is Martin Mull? And from those, you know, from the great, all these actors are from, you know, the same class as, say, a Fred Willard, that kind of thing. And Michael McKean, of course, is Mr. Green, who is a homosexual. Oh, spoiler, though. He may or may not be a homosexual, depending on what ending we get to. But he works for the State Department, and that's why he's being blackmailed. Martin Mull, by the way, I skipped over him a little bit. He has a great line. I think he says it to Leslie Ann Warren.
You know, it wasn't that bad.
How can you make jokes at a time like this?
It's my defense mechanism.
Some defense. If I was the killer, I would kill you next.
Oh?
I said if.
Yeah. There's a couple great lines in there. There was a great line in the very beginning of the movie that Christopher Lloyd delivers when he picks up, when Professor Plum picks up Miss Scarlet on the side of the road, and they go driving up to the house, and the car is, he stops in the road, and
that must be it.
Why is the car stopped?
It's frightened.
It's little things like that where it's just those little pieces of dialogue that are thrown in there that are one-liners, but they're so brilliant.
Oh, I'm gonna drop in a Madeline Kahn quote.
I've admitted nothing.
Well, you paid the blackmail. How many husbands have you had?
Mine or other women's?
Yours.
Five.
Yes,
just the five. Husbands should be like Kleenex. Soft, strong, and disposable.
You lure men to their deaths like a spider with flies.
Flies are where men are most vulnerable.
Right.
she delivers the other great line where, like...
But he was your second husband. Your first husband also disappeared.
But that was his job. He was an illusionist.
But he never reappeared.
He wasn't a very good illusionist.
No, she really is. She really is the Black Widow. I mean, and she is probably, she's probably one of my favorite characters in this movie.
Oh,
just
yeah.
Because of, like I said, I just expect her to just go off at any moment. Like, she might be packing an Uzi. So.
Now, did you see the trivia about the role of Yvette, the maid?
No.
Also considered for that role were Jennifer Jason Leigh, Demi Moore, and Madonna.
Oh, Lord.
But, eager to earn the part, Colleen Camp, who played the role, went to her audition in a French maid costume. The director, Jonathan Lynn, admitted that although he was, you know, reasonably impressed with her comedic acting skills, it was her boobs. That's what convinced him for the role. Because that was the whole thing.
Well, that was the role. I mean, that really was the role.
Oh, no. And during dinner, every single character, like, gawked at her boobs. Every single one. Hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's hard to... I mean, I want everybody to go out and see this movie, but in the very beginning, the whole thing about the dog poop is just hilarious to me. Just the fact that everybody thinks they've stepped in it because they're smelling Wadsworth's shoes. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because we've been there.
Well, and it's also not necessary to the story.
But it's funny.
It's great.
But there was a thing about there was one thing about the dogs that bothered me.
And what's that?
You notice in the beginning of the movie that it was two German Shepherds?
Yes.
But later on in the movie, when Mr. Body tries to break out of the solarium, it's a Doberman?
Yeah, I noticed that too. I thought, well, are these different dogs, or is this just...
It was just one of those incongruities that I was like, all right. And, you know, one of the funniest parts of the movie is I wrote Big Boobed Yvette on the attic stairs next to Michael McKean.
Oh, yes.
As they're trying to just, like, squeeze up. It was hilarious. I was dying. It makes me laugh. Still. I'm like, just like a 12-year-old. You know, and as you get further into the movie, Madeline Kahn again. Madeline Kahn really, she really is over the top in this movie in the best way, because when it's revealed that she may be one of the killers.
You were jealous that your husband was stopping her, that's why you killed him, too.
Yes. Yes, I did it. I killed Yvette. I hated her so much. Flames on the side of my face. Heaving breaths.
But while we were in the building.
I mean, that whole line that she gives is so hilariously believable that, like, I believe she would have killed somebody.
Oh, yeah.
But at the end, towards the end of the movie, where they're all singing, you know, for She's a Jolly Good Fellow, Madeline Kahn really sells it. Like, she sells the hell out of her singing. Like, she's harmonizing, and she is absolutely making that song work.
Oh, she's a professional. I'm going to say that Madeline Kahn is a goddamn American treasure.
I would absolutely agree with that.
Although, everybody in this movie, pretty much, all the main character or actors are treasures. Absolutely.
Well, the whole movie. I mean, and the house is great. I love the house. The house itself was just a fantastic house. But one little anecdote that I discovered when watching this movie that I hadn't known up until I told Derek, I'm like, oh my God, I just realized who that was. The singing telegram girl, Jane Wiedlin.
And what's she been in?
She's a singer. She's a pop singer. She's done all kinds of, like, more for my generation, like teenage angst, slit your wrist kind of music.
Well, she is my favorite death in the whole movie.
I am your singing telegram.
She was kind of an angsty singer in my generation, you know, in the late 80s and early 90s, and she had a song in the soundtrack of Pretty Woman. And it's an odd role for her to have been in, because I don't know that she does a lot of acting, so I'm wondering if she knew somebody on the set or so. But it was just one of those things where I'm like, I finally recognized her, and I was like, oh, God.
Well, I mean,
how long have I...
The casting was, they cast a wide net for this movie. I mean, if Jennifer Jason Leigh, Demi Moore, and Madonna were all considered to play the maid, then whoever did the casting on this had had a good time and seemed to have their fair pick of people to take.
It just seems crazy. It seemed crazy. It would have been a very different movie, I think.
Of course. You know, did you know that Howard Hessman is not even credited in the movie?
I didn't.
He's not listed in the credits, although he's the end of the movie.
Huh. I was not aware of that. That's terrible.
Now, this movie, were you working at the theater when this movie came out? No, you weren't.
No, you were too young.
Okay. Because I guess they had the three different endings, and
depending on what part of the country you're in, you only saw one of the endings.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You didn't see all of the endings until you got to see it on video later.
Right.
And now pretty much all of the, anytime you see it, it will show all three of the endings with
in succession.
Yeah, with the last ending being the one how it happened, which is
right.
Spoiler, everybody did it. Except
which
of course,
is I think why we I think that we didn't we I think we opted not to see it because we were of the opinion like, well, if there's three endings, why are we gonna go see it? We're never gonna know the right one.
Well, exactly, yeah.
And so I think we just were like, nah.
Plus, which, this was the heyday of home video.
It would have been fun to see in the movie theaters, but
Oh, totally. Yeah, it would totally have been fun to see in the theater. It'd be fun to see in the theater now. It was fun to see on a little tablet. I was watching on a TV for a change, but my dog kept barking at the other dogs. So, back to the tablet and the headphones I went. Someday I'll get to watch a movie again.
But no, this is a fun movie, and it's not a, I mean, there's a lot of death in it per se, but it's all over the top death.
Oh, yeah. It's all stage death.
Yeah. You know, the cook and the really uncomfortable where they're like holding onto the knife in her back as they're moving her around.
Oh, I love the scene.
Cringe inducingly bad.
Oh, I love the scene, like basically the necrophilia scene when the cop comes in.
Yeah, where Mrs. Peacock is moaning over the around the dead body.
Yeah, well, and also isn't Mrs. White actually like perched on top
making
of
out.
Yeah, and making yeah. out with the dead body.
Yeah. I think that the cast had a lot of fun making this movie.
Well, and I love the fact that at the very end, or actually it's all in all three of the endings, there was a line given that communism was just a red herring.
Red herring.
I mean, you know, come on. That's fantastic. You know, it's Mel Brooks type humor, but that's still funny. It's as funny as dog poop, I'm telling you.
Yeah, no, I like Mel Brooks.
Me too. So. Yeah, not everything's a hit, but most of them are hits.
No, my favorite Mel Brooks movie of all time was made before I was even born.
Which was that?
High Anxiety.
Oh, I thought that was going to be your favorite, yes.
You thought that would be my favorite?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
It absolutely is. It absolutely is. Harvey Korman and Cloris Leachman and Madeline Kahn. It's just so...
Well, it's a send-up of all the Hitchcock movies, which is great.
Yeah.
Because we, you know, we like the Hitchcock movies, and we like all the actors, and we like Mel Brooks, and we're comfortable in his hands. I thought Spaceballs was hilarious.
Spaceballs was funny.
And, I mean, even, like, if you go back and watch Blazing Saddles, some of it doesn't hold up as well as, you know, it's a little bit of Nightbreed scenario going on. Because, you know, fart jokes really only, you know, they're not what they used to be. Some of the things that were very shocking back then aren't as shocking now.
Right.
And some of the things that were shocking because of race relations are just sort of offensive sounding now.
Yeah.
So, actually, wasn't The Gay Blade pretty funny? I remember, I mean, I only saw it a couple times, but... It was definitely on heavy rotation as the on HBO or Showtime or whatever.
Yeah, no, it was okay. I mean, it wasn't one of those where I'm like, I would go back and watch it.
Yeah, pretty short, you know, conversation about Clue, except that I totally want everybody to go watch it again because it's just fun.
No, you gotta watch it because we even though we've told you everything, we still haven't spoiled it because there's so much delivery in this movie that we can't oversell it.
Oh, no, and like, I could go through all of the plots of all the endings, but it's not even necessary. I mean, if you're just the least bit familiar with the game, you realize that somebody's got to die, and there's a mystery about who did it, and everybody's got some sort of motive, and it's all shell game to figure out who really did it, just like an Agatha Christie play.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so perfectly fun. And then our next... week or well next week in real time we will talk about Murder by Death and see how it compares, see if it's a different kind of thing altogether. But
I've actually already watched it.
Oh, well, give me a preview of how it compares.
It's better to me only because it's more farcical and it's got a little bit wittier repartee to it. It's a little more written, but it is very much in the same play style, which is not surprising because it was written by Neil Simon. So
Well, and of course the actors in that are even
Truman
better.
Capote.
Yeah, exactly.
Truman Capote. So,
well, isn't Peter Ustinov in there too?
No, James Coco.
James Coco. Okay. Who? Mm-hmm. What Peter Ustinov movie am I? Anyway, we'll get there.
I don't know. Everybody is in the movie at the time it was made. You know, Peter Sellers and David Niven, and I can never remember his name.
Well, the setup Murder by Death, are they all detectives?
Yes.
Okay, so all the guests in this particular party are detectives, whereas Clue is all the guests are potential killers, but that's because they're being blackmailed, and they're all from diverse backgrounds. And in Murder by Death, it's all detectives from the stories you know.
Right.
Because there's a Charlie Chan character, right?
Peter Sellers plays Sidney Wang, yes.
Yeah.
But, God, what is his... James Cromwell, that's his name.
Oh, from
James
Babe.
James Cromwell is in this movie. What's that?
From Babe.
Well, I know him from iRobot.
Well, from Babe and also the much better Babe, Pig in the City.
Never seen either of them.
Really?
But... now.
Huh.
What planet did you think I would have watched this?
Well, you know, I have no idea when you would have watched it.
Exactly. So, but you know, Murder by Death is different and it's definitely more of a stage play. You can absolutely see how it would have been a stage play had Neil Simon, I don't know, maybe he had it on a stage, I don't know, but I have a hard time believing Truman Capote would have gone on a stage production. Very different movie, but similar bent, but Murder by Death was funnier in my opinion, but for a different reason, because it's a different movie. But I watched it on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
Which I got to stream in total high def, and it was such a clean copy compared to my DVD I was like, wow, this is a gorgeous Murder by Death. This is just a gorgeous movie.
What was the DVD? It's just a VHS transfer, probably, or
I think probably the DVD copy I have is a regular DVD. It's a regular def. It's just a plain old DVD, and I've had it for probably I probably had it forever. So yeah, it was probably just a straight VHS transfer, where the one on Amazon has clearly been either digitally remastered or a full digital copy from the original. But I recommend, you know, I'm being plugged for Amazon. You know, they had a better copy than I had, and I opted to pay the $5 or whatever it was just to have it because I wanted to see it. I couldn't find my copy. I think I loaned it to somebody, and I haven't got it back yet. So,
you downloaded the HD copy of it. Now you have it.
I purchased the HD copy of it, so I own the HD copy. I didn't download it because it's streaming.
Oh, okay. But you have the right to download it forever or stream it forever?
Forever. It's now permanently mine.
Oh, that's awesome. And that's the way to go, really. If you have unlimited bandwidth, that's the way to go. I don't have unlimited bandwidth, so I still get DVDs.
Well, I do have unlimited bandwidth as long as I'm not fighting with other people for the network. But now that I have faster internet at the house, Derek, gaming thing tends to disrupt my gaming less. So we have more than enough bandwidth. We just, you know, sometimes I'm greedy about it.
Well, it's for our house, you know, it doesn't take long. And of course, my daughter, who is 4.5, she will be streaming something on her iPad, a hand-me-down from her, Kelly's parents, and I'll find it like the iPad is upside down on a chair where she's left it. Still streaming, by the way.
Do you have a monthly cap?
We do.
Oh, ouch.
Yes, and it's not all that, because we have a fairly large cap, which you pay for, it's, you know, it's not quite as punitive. Like if we had a smaller package, not in a creepy way, then it would cost more if we went over. Now it doesn't cost quite as much per megabyte if we go over, but it's a per megabyte charge if we go over.
Wow, that sucks.
Yeah, so I can, you know, I could potentially...
My cell plan's like that, but my home internet is not. I don't have a cap. I don't have a limit.
Yeah, well, we didn't have a limit when we had, you know, 1 megabyte service, but now we have 18 megabyte service with a different company, and so there's a cap, but it's a large cap. So as long as, you know, and I have our Netflix accounts set up to only stream in standard def, because it wouldn't take long, high def streaming, and who needs to high def stream some kid show that's not even available in HD.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't recorded in HD, so it's, you know, it's not worth streaming it in HD.
Yeah, no, everything I have is in, I mean, I try and get everything in high def that I can, so.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Which, by the way, just eats up my DVR space, like, exponentially.
Oh, I know. So. Yeah, I know that. I have to be careful. Also, with the Dish, because we have Dish Network, we have it set up so that some of the programs you can just transfer directly to your tablet device or your like an iPhone or whatever. Well, that's great, but it actually converts it into a different type of file, and so that takes extra space in your DVR as well. So that sucks.
Oh man, yeah. No, I have a DVR from the cable company, so it's all there. So it just records directly. It's not very fancy, but an hour of high def takes like 3% of my DVR.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Very quickly, you know, I have to triage. Although I'm getting better about DVR angst. In the beginning, I was terrible, but I'm getting better about what I record and what I don't.
So. Well, and there are so many things that, like, I'll set up to record at midnight. I happen to like the Chris Hardwick game show at midnight. But I fast forward through everything. And I almost never watch the very end. And about probably two nights a week, I don't even watch it at all. So I have it set up to record every single episode, but I'll probably watch half of them, which means I have to manually go back. And for some reason, it records them twice, and I don't know why. It has something to do with the way they like code the show. Because I only have one timer set up, but it records it as a new episode both times. Maybe it's calling it New East Coast, New West Coast.
Oh, maybe. I was having a problem with my DVR because it wasn't recording Wilford because it wasn't marking them as new, even though they're brand new, and I was totally enraged.
What's Wilford?
Wilford is an Australian import that has been made Americanized. It's starring Elijah Wood as a lawyer who, the very first episode, he's a lawyer, he's having a rough time with life, he tries to kill himself, and he does a botched attempt at it, and then suddenly his neighbor's dog is now just this guy in a dog fursuit that he can talk to, but everybody else still sees the dog.
Oh dear.
And it's a Australian series that was very hilarious, and they brought it to America. And the first season of Wilford was, I can't tell you how painfully funny the first season of Wilford was. But then the second season was kind of funny and dark, and then the third season was just absolutely dark. And so I think this is the fourth season maybe, and it's lost me. It's so dark that I haven't laughed at it at all, and I'm like, this is not the show that I signed up for.
But is it dark in a good way? I mean, you're still engaged. You're still watching.
I'm still watching it because I'm hoping I can figure out what the hell they're trying to do. The only reason I'm watching it is because I don't understand.
Huh.
So, but it's just been dark, 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 which is like 180 degrees of the first season. The Australian version of the show was kind of dark, but also kind of hilarious. But also kind of hilarious because the same dog actor is the same dog actor in the American version.
Oh, that's
awesome. I really like him. So he really kind of makes the role. And, of course, you know, full disclosure, I have a Wilford dog costume that I wore for Halloween, so.
It's your business. Don't ask, don't tell.
Well, I wore it once because it was hotter than hell. I might as well have just set myself on fire.
Let me recommend something from Australia as well. And we do have Australian listeners, too. So, you know. Whatever.
Good day.
Whatever the appropriate Australian thing is. I'm not going to try to do an accent.
I probably offended them all. Like your wine.
Yeah, well,
send us
exactly.
Some. We'd be happy to sample it on the air.
Yeah, and yes, I believe that the Outback Restaurant Steakhouse is racist as well, so that's okay. Anyway,
can I say I don't like Outback?
Yeah, you know, in our local community, of the mid price steakhouse, it actually beats like Cattle Company, Lone Star, those choices because they just actually do a better steak. But everything else about it is subpar.
Derek and I have been there a couple times, and I've just never had a really great meal there. They've been mediocre at best.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and every time I go to the Bloomin' Onion thing, when I'm like, it's greasy and oily, and it I don't think it's all that good.
Oh, no, I don't mind a Bloomin' Onion, but it has nothing to do with Australia, which is, how do I learn this? From what I'm going to recommend, which is the TOEFOP podcast. Actually, it's called FOFOP also. It's the Will Anderson podcast. Will Anderson is a comedian who is super popular in Australia and just becoming popular in America. He is hilarious. I highly recommend it. It's, again, TOEFOP is what you find under TOEFOP, which is a play on, cause it's 30 odd feet of podcast, which is a play on Russell Crowe's, band, 30 odd feet of grunt.
Oh God.
Which I think they change it to The Ordinary Fear of God. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. Will Anderson is very funny. And his podcast consists of him sitting pretty much on his roof or a balcony, just talking to another comedian friend. And they just talk about stuff. It's just fun. It's very lighthearted. They rarely go into like Marc Maron type discussions. Although a couple times, like he'll bring up the outright racism of the Outback Steakhouse. But,
okay.
You know, again, it's from his perspective.
Derek and I are actually, for the money, we'll go a couple other places.
Well, yeah, of course.
Better food.
But it would be like still having the Pancake House in America, Sambo's.
There is still a Sambo's.
Yeah, well, that's kind of racist,
here in
too.
In Oregon.
Yeah, not great.
I drive by it, and every time I drive by it, I'm like, I can't believe it's still around. But
did you ever see the Spike Lee movie? The Damon Wayans movie, Bamboozled?
No.
It is a good movie. And it's It's Damon Wayans, but it's also Tommy Davidson and, oh God, I'm going to forget the name of the tap dancer. They do a modern minstrel show where they themselves put themselves in blackface and they recreate. Oh, Savion Glover. That's the name of the dancer. So it's Savion Glover and Tommy Davidson who play these modern day minstrel artists where they do the tap dancing and the singing and nobody here but us chickens, sir.
Oh my God.
Those kind of really racist skits. And Damon Wayans plays this character who one time he collected, then people started sending him these old tchotchkes, some of which my mother-in-law collects too, from the old South, where it shows ads that have, the Negro characters as part of the ad. And some of them are really super racist. And it's, some of it is just, you look at it and you're like, oh, and others of it is really insidious. And until you realize, and at the end, I think they show all of these things. Maybe it's a long panning shot of all of those little knickknacks. There's also a different movie called The Confederate States of America. The premise is that it's sort of if I remember correctly, it's a little bit like Kentucky Fried Movie, where it's little segments, but in between it, but it's all about the conceit is the Confederates won the war. So slavery is still a thing. And they have ads in between the little segments of these products. And they show the products, and it's as bad as you can. I'm not going to even say the word, because it's bad.
Yeah.
But then at the end, they show that all these products actually existed.
Oh, dear.
So
as farcical as it was supposed to be, it's only farcical because it was real.
Well, yeah, it's dark satire. Yeah, it's both movies, very interesting. And, of course, I'm looking at it through the lens of an extremely white guy who lives in Alaska, for God's sake. So,
Well, yeah, I'm not exactly a culturally replete gentleman in the state of Oregon. We're not exactly diverse, so.
Well, no, you have the hippies and the skinheads and the junkies.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the Republicans, right? The four groups, basically?
Yeah, pretty much.
And
there's the Portlanders and then there's everybody else.
Well, there you go. I was going to say then you have your black man, Ron Funches, who's one of my favorite stand-ups right now.
Which one is he?
He's the heavyset black guy with the Cleveland.
The really mellow black guy.
Yes, with a really slow delivery.
The girly giggle.
Yeah, exactly. He is
We just watched him on Comedy Central and Derek and I thought he was hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know he was really from Oregon.
Yeah, well, his story is that, he grew up in Chicago, and then his parents, maybe his dad actually, moved him to Oregon because it was too scary in Chicago. it's a little bit like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air kind of thing.
Yeah, because Oregon is white as white can be sometimes. Yeah.
Well, and then,
it's not really receptive to black people.
But his delivery is so slow and methodical and hilarious.
Yeah, no, I did enjoy his Comedy Central half an hour show. I saw him and I've forgotten her name.
Maria Bamford.
She's always on Chelsea lately.
Whitney Cummings.
No, she's really big and curly hair and
Fortune Feimster.
Yeah. I kept, because she calls herself the White Precious. So.
Which is hysterical.
Yeah, hilarious. But so there's that. And I think you and I discussed Don't See Jobs, the movie.
Yeah, tell us. Yeah, give us our little, the little bit of Judge Jason.
I was so disappointed. I really. And in full disclosure, I hate Ashton Kutcher. I really do. I despise him. I don't like him. I can't imagine a role in anything I've ever seen him do that I actually thought, hey, he's kind of the modern day Keanu Reeves, if you will. Where he seems to be in things inexplicably, but just because he happens to be the flavor of the week. And he did a fine job in the movie acting. As far as I can tell, I don't have anything against him as an actor. I just don't like him. But the Jobs film, and I may be too hard on the film because I read the biography, which I shouldn't say I read it. I had the biography on Audible and listened to it, which is fantastic. Fantastic, fantastic, fantastic. The book, the biography about Steve Jobs, is fantastic. And it is very comprehensive, and it doesn't pull any punches, and it's, some of it's very ugly and very dark, and, but it gives you some insight into Steve Jobs and how people are like, well, he was an asshole. And Steve Jobs says, well, he explained, the engineers around him explained, Steve wasn't necessarily an asshole, is that he didn't know how to effectively communicate. And so when he would say things to you that were abrasive, it wasn't that he was saying them to you to be abrasive. It was that he didn't have any other way to say it in a way that he could relay it understandably to himself. Like, that's fucking stupid, when really what he meant to say was, I don't understand why you can't do this a different way.
Yeah. But much, you know, like ironic racism, the difference between ironic racism and plain old racism is knowing the person. So if you're on the receiving end of somebody who is an asshole, it doesn't really matter what their history is.
I think a lot of people didn't understand him because he didn't allow himself to be understood. He deliberately was just like, I'm doing my thing, and I'm doing my thing because I've always done my thing, and I've always been able to do my thing, and don't get in my way, because it's when I get in my way that I plow over people, but I always prove I'm right.
Yeah. It's like, and this thing's been working for me. Everything's pure fucking magic, so leave me to this. This is what I do.
Yeah. And I've been successful, so stay out of my way. You know, it's only when people have gotten in my way and told me not to do something and thrown up roadblocks if we have problems. And so he lacks humility, obviously. A great part of his life, he lacks humility. You know, but the book was, like I said, the book is so comprehensive and goes through the beginning of, you know, how he was grown up and he was adopted, and there was angst over that. Not necessarily by him or his adopted parents, but there was just angst because of that. And growing up in California and meeting, you know, big Steve Wozniak and all of that, and creating Apple and conning, you know, basically doing a con job to get to sell the first Apple, to be able to sell the Apple II. And through, you know, his first girlfriend and his child that he, you know, he doesn't acknowledge for years and years. And so all of the drama, all of that, which is the real Steve Jobs. And then there's this movie, and this movie has not much to do about Steve. I guess the movie is really just about Apple. The movie has little sprinklings of Jobs' life in the background, but the movie is about Apple. It's all about how he created Apple, how he built Apple, how he got sidetracked at Apple, how he lost Apple, and how he got Apple back. That's really the Jobs movie. That's really what the Jobs movie is about. And it really doesn't have, I mean, it has some little backstory about Steve Jobs, but it's not very accurate in as much as it's been dramatized for the screen, for obvious reasons. But as a movie itself, it's just, unless you go into it thinking, this is just a movie about Apple Inc.
Mm. So it would be, I'm trying to make an analogy, and this is, I know my youngest brother doesn't really always appreciate analogous comparisons, but it would be like if that Russell Crowe movie earlier in the year, instead of being called Noah, it was called The Bible.
Well, I didn't see the movie, so I don't have a way to validate that comparison.
Well, whether or not it did a good job of telling the Noah story, you can't call it The Bible, because The Bible takes more stories than just the Noah story.
Right, and this movie ends... when Steve Jobs tapes Apple back, pretty much.
From, like, the Pepsi guys?
After the Pepsi guy, right. It's basically when he fires, by the way, spoiler, when he has sold all of his own personal Apple stock to drive Apple stock price down so low that they have no choice but to be like, we need somebody to come and save us. Will you do it?
Oh, that's
funny. He's like, I will, but these are going to be my conditions. Which is how he ends up being CEO of Apple again, because he's driven them into the ground by his own stock that they gave him.
That's hilarious. So he's a Machiavellian character as well.
Oh, Steve Jobs was a genius. I don't doubt that he was way beyond his time and place. I mean, he really was an amazingly brilliant man. Rude and short and not very socially skilled. But, you know, but he made up for it in other ways. But the movie ends at him taking back Apple. So and there's so much more after that story.
It doesn't talk about him being a fruitarian because he's got cancer and all this other stuff?
It doesn't mention the cancer ever. The whole movie, no cancer. It doesn't talk about him being a fruitarian. It makes a point about, at the beginning of the movie about him being a fruitarian. And they make a joke in the beginning of the movie about how he smells bad at his Atari days.
Oh, but, okay.
But that's like fleeting. That's like barely, tangential. But the movie ends with him taking back Apple, which is like, okay, so you haven't released the iMac, you haven't released the iPod at that point. And, so all these things, the iPhone, all these things that happened that were even more revolutionary, there's no movie about that at all.
Which is hilarious, because although he did change personal computing, and he made computing more elegant, what with the fonts and things.
Yeah.
And also, of course, he brought it into your home. But
yeah.
I would argue
and in your
that...
school.
Yeah, well, in your schools. But I would argue that the iPhone was more revolutionary.
I would agree with you. I would agree with you. The iPod was revolutionary.
True, but the iPhone, I resisted the iPod completely. I resisted it until I was given one as a gift, and it was an iPod Touch, so it was much more than just a MP3 player.
Well, and I resisted the iPod for a long time, too, up until the point where, I was buying, Panasonic MP3 CD players that played MP3 CD discs that I was making. And then I just had too much. It was it became too problematic to burn a dozen discs to take with me. And there was hey, here's this device. They finally made a device big enough for me to carry my collection around in. They made, I think I bought 160 gig iPod video. And I was okay, I can carry all my music and I'm buying this.
Yeah.
And then once I bought it, it was the gateway drug. I was oh, damn.
Well, that's now the thing. I hated iTunes for the longest time. iTunes, I used a different podcatcher even when I started listening to podcasts. I have, in a Ziploc bag with all the accessories. I have my Digiset player. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
It's a cassette that you put it's an MMC card or something. It can hold 10 songs, and you put it into your cassette deck in your car. But I had so many creative Zens. I still have probably 5 in various states of working order creative Zen MP3 players.
Mm-hmm.
Love them. Because you know what else they worked? What I like in things, I like buttons. Not simulated buttons, I like real buttons because I'm old. And I also like batteries that you can replace.
Yeah.
Because rechargeable batteries, if all of a sudden they don't hold a charge or blah, blah, blah. It's I want the ability to have a couple of batteries in my pocket so I can just have fresh ones when I need them. Not great environmentally, but
yeah,
it sure is, helpful. But, of course, now I have an iPhone. You can hardly not.
Well, and I I didn't have an iPhone for a long time. My first iPhone was the iPhone 3. I think. No, 4. I got a 4. 4? I don't know.
Well, mine was my first iPhone was iPhone 5. I didn't have a smartphone until...
I had a 4, just a plain 4. And they came out... I love my 4. I still have it, actually. I use it in my bedroom now. It is attached to the Bose radio that I inherited from my grandmother. And so it wakes me up with music supplied through Pandora from my formerly working iPhone 4, which I broke, which still functions. I just broke the screen.
It's like an iPod Touch or something, right?
It really is just an iPod Touch at this point. But I have an iPhone 5, and when I got the iPhone 4, I was because I had an LG phone before, and I really did love my LG phone. I really did. It was great. I had a tactile keyboard. That's the one thing I hate about the Apple phone is the keyboard. I really despise the keyboard.
I want buttons. I want real buttons.
I want at least tactile feedback is my problem, but that's my one flaw. But once I got the iPhone 4, I was like, oh, I like this so much better than my LG. I do. And then when I got the 5, when I broke my 4, I was like, this is sleeker and lighter and faster. And I really, it's shiny candy, candy colored buttons. And it's like, oh, I've been lulled in. So I was totally a sucker.
Well, the nice thing about that I learned about having, the iPod and the iPod Touch rather, and the iPhone is that because Apple controls their own store, unlike the Android stores, the only time things won't work is if your device is too old. If you've got a device that's too old to support the newest whatever, then, you know, that's kind of, that's your SOL. But everything in the iPod store or the iTunes app store works. Because they only have to develop it for one product. And that's all I want in a computer or a phone. It's something that works out of the box.
Yeah.
I mean, that's did a month.
That's a good thing about Apple. It works pretty much just out of the box.
Yeah. Well, and before I got an iPad, I obsessed because that's what I do. I joined Android tablet user groups. I learned how to jailbreak a Nook HD and turn it into a Jelly Bean Android tablet or something. I mean, all these things that I was like thinking, okay, what's my best value for money? Because, you know, the iPad is just so freaking expensive. And then I realized after like a month of obsessing about it, like seriously every single day checking message boards about stuff, I'm a nut. I realized, okay, I would have to do basically taking on at that point an Android tablet was like getting a hobby. And taking on an iPad would be coming up with the money, and then you turn it on, and it's beautiful, and it works right out of the box. And that's right. What I opted for. It's like, okay, fine. You know, we're spending the extra couple bucks, get the real thing, and I won't have to be babysitting or jailbreaking or updating the, you know, into a different kind of version of Android, depending on the hardware configurations, blah, blah, blah. Like, there's no way.
Right.
Works out of the box. That's what I want.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, I love my iPad. I have an iBook. I have a MacBook. It's an older MacBook. I still use it. You know, the debate will be when my laptop finally dies. I bought a new battery for it, so it's good for probably a couple more years, but I suspect the next software update Apple does will not support my laptop. But then I'll have to do the debate. Do I want to spend the money for another MacBook, or do I want to get a PC laptop? And I'm like, I don't know. So that'll be a debate. Or
maybe instead of getting a PC laptop, you'll be getting like a Surface Pro 3 or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd rather have a laptop. I don't want to have something. My problem with the reason to get a MacBook Air is because I know what would happen is I would treat it like my iPad and I would toss it around. And the problem with having something so light that you don't think is substantial is it's a $700 or $800 thing that you're tossing around.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I upgraded from – I'm recording this right now on an HP laptop, but I replaced this HP laptop with a desktop, like a big old tower, because I wanted something that was going to have guts to it. And
I have a PC laptop in my living room – laptop. I have a PC desktop. That is a gaming rig that I have that I play online gaming on my PC in my living room, and my big 60-inch TV is the monitor.
Yeah, and that's
but it's a desktop and it's full powerful but I use it for my computing for the most of my computing.
Well, exactly. Anything, you know, all the editing stuff, everything that, you know, all the photo editing and stuff I do, I don't do it on the laptop. I do it on my desktop because it's got the guts to handle it. And is it a bigger form factor? Yeah, you bet. You know, I managed to find a desk, like an old laptop or old tower desk on wheels that actually has the little tower caddy that the tower sits in, so I can still roll it kind of back and forth. So it's a little bit more mobile than if it was sitting at a traditional desk. But still, it's a big hunkin' piece of machinery. But it also works, and it was, even though it was pretty expensive, it would have cost me 3 times as much to get that in a laptop form factor.
Yeah.
Plus, I can grill a cheese sandwich on my HP laptop. It gets so hot. It's crazy.
Yeah, my MacBook is a laptop only in name. You wouldn't ever want it on your lap, ever.
Oh, yeah.
Because it would just leave you, it would brand you.
It's interesting how things are, you know, and again, I don't know, we're going way off field from Clue, obviously. But, you know, who would have thought that the thing that you'd have in your pocket that's the most powerful, you know, way more powerful computer than we ever dreamt of as kids, is phone.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they thought about the whole Dick Tracy watches and stuff, and for a while they tried to make the watch thing work, but just didn't. And then this Google Glass, I've never seen one in person, but I've seen a couple of people do videos about other stuff, but they happen to be wearing Google Glass while they do it. And there's a reason why they call those people glass holes.
Yeah.
Because it looks stupid. It's the most ridiculous thing. And it's also like a status thing. It's like, stop. I can't see buying a pair of Google Glass glasses.
And I have something interesting to discuss about Google Glass, but it can't be on the podcast. So when we're done talking, I can talk to you about Google Glass.
You have something racist about it, or?
No. I have a commentary a bit about Google Glass, and then I have an opportunity because of it, but I don't want to give it away because it's my idea.
Oh, okay. I got it. Okay. So anyway, anything more about Clue or anything else this week before we sign off and go to Murder by Death next time?
Nope. I think we're good.
Okay. Well, thanks again for listening. We always appreciate that. Send your cards and letters. No, don't send cards and letters. Just send an email to show@notinacreepyway.com or pretty much anything at notinacreepyway.com.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, we like feedback. Feedback of any kind is important. But although we're doing this for love, we like feedback too.
Well, give us a shout out about your city or your hometown or where you're listening from or how you found us. We'd love to know all of that because we're a demographic whore.
Exactly. And yours truly obsesses about numbers and statistics. So, you know, anything you could add to that would be great. So, till next week, this has been Not in a Creepy Way.